ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 18. Is that correct? 19, okay. Otherwise, you can just check the list for me, because we want to keep the schedule. Oh, sorry. It's 18? Yeah. Yeah, we did 18. Yeah, yesterday we did 18. Yeah, very good. Yeah, I see it now. Yeah, very good. Okay, so please repeat from the word for word. Tasmat asaktaha satatam karyam karma samachara asaktaha hi acharan karma param apnoti purushaha tasmat asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakta yacharan karma param apnoti purusha tasmat asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakta yacharan karma param apnoti purusha tasmat asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakta yacharan karma param apnoti purusha. Tasmat asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakto yacharam karma param abnoti purusha. Tasmat asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakta yacharan karma param apnoti purusha. Would anybody else like to try? Want to try, please? Tasmat asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakta yacharan karma param apnoti purusha. Would you like to try? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have my glasses. Would you like to try, Mataji? No? Okay. Would you like to try? Tasmat asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakta yacharan karma param apnoti purusha. Please repeat. Tasmat therefore asaktaha without attachment satatam constantly karyam as duty karma work samachara perform asaktaha unattached he Certainly, acharan, performing, karma, work, param, the supreme, apnoti, achieves, purushaha, a man. Translation. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. Purport. The Supreme is the personality of Godhead for the devotees and liberation for the impersonalists. A person therefore acting for Krishna or in Krishna consciousness under proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work is certainly making progress toward the supreme goal of life. Arjuna is told that he should fight in the battle of Kurukshetra for the interest of Krishna, because Krishna wanted him to fight. To be a good man or a non-violent man is a personal attachment, but to act on behalf of the Supreme is to act without attachment for the result. That is perfect action of the highest degree recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Vedic rituals, like prescribed sacrifices, are performed for purification of impious activities that were performed in the field of sense gratification. But action in Krishna consciousness is transcendental to the reactions of good or evil work. A Krishna conscious person has no attachment for the result, but acts on behalf of Krishna alone. He engages in all kinds of activities, but is completely non-attached. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Salakya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistang Stapitang Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayang Dadati Svapadantikang Vandehang Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalang Sri Gurun Vaishnavangcha Sri Rupang Sakrajatam Sakana Raghunatang Vitang Tang Sajivang Sadvaitang Savadutang Parijana Saitang Krishna Chaitanya Devang Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sakana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitangcha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhara Srivasadi Ghora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tasmat asakta satatang karyam karma samachara, asakto yacharang karma, param abnoti purushaha. So we are here falling in the middle of the discussion of Arjuna and Krishna. So Arjuna, at the beginning of this chapter, he had a question. And it's quite an interesting question. Of course, when one reads Bhagavad Gita, one should understand that Krishna is God. Prabhupada says if we don't accept that Krishna is God, then the Bhagavad Gita becomes more or less useless, because then it's just another book. And, you know, we have our opinion and Krishna has his opinion. This is not really the way to study Bhagavad Gita. If you study it, in the second chapter, Arjuna, he surrendered to Krishna as his guru. He said, I don't know what to do. Because I'll give a short introduction about what is going on historically, because actually this is a historical event. You can see it here. It's a picture. There was a world war 5,000 years ago in India, near Delhi. At Kurukshetra, it's a place in India, and I've been there. It's quite a nice place actually. But there was a huge battlefield there, and all the armies of the world they were gathered there. What happened is that there's a long history, but I'll pick it up from there was a blind king, and he was ruling the kingdom. What had happened is that his brother was actually ruling the kingdom, but he was the younger brother. But because the older brother was blind, he wasn't considered fit to rule the kingdom. So it was understood that his younger brother would rule it. But now his younger brother had died prematurely, and his children were all very young. They were like 4 or 5 years old, so they were way too young to rule the kingdom. So the idea was that his older brother, the blind Dhritarashtra, would rule the kingdom until the sons would be grown, and then the oldest son would take over the government of the kingdom. In those days, actually, the world was being governed from Delhi. It was called Hastinapur. Hastina means elephant, and Pur means city. It was the city of the elephants. Elephant is very expensive to maintain. It costs so much money. So it's a sign of richdom if you can have so many elephants. So in Delhi, in those days, there were thousands, maybe even millions of elephants. And so it was like a very rich city. That's why it was called Hastinapur. And so Dhritarashtra, he also had his sons. And his oldest son was Duryodhan. And now Duryodhan, when he grew older, he felt that he should rule the kingdom. Since, you know, of course he wanted to rule the kingdom anyway, because to be honest, he was a little bit of a, not a little bit, he was a real bad guy actually. And he wanted to rule the kingdom. And he was thinking that my father actually should have ruled the kingdom because he was the oldest son. So actually, the kingdom belongs to me. Which, of course, wasn't the case. The kingdom belonged to Pandu, and because he died, his sons were the rightful heirs to the throne. And so when the time came, and you have to understand that all these sons, Duryodhan and Arjuna and his older brother Yudhishthir, they all grew up together in the court, and they had the same teachers. And like that, these boys, they were trained by martial arts teachers, by, you know, so many scholars. They were teaching them about politics, everything. So when the time came for the coronation, then basically Duryodhan, he usurped the kingdom. And then ultimately also there was a dice match. He devised a plan to cheat Yudhishthir of his kingdom, and what he did, he asked his uncle to challenge his nephew Yudhishthir in a dice game, and a warrior, he cannot refuse a challenge. It's like if somebody challenges you, you have to take up the challenge, otherwise you're considered a coward. So he lost his whole, the dice, they cheated with the dice. There were some special dice. And every time the dice were in favor of, what's his name? Shakunti? Shakunti? Shikunti? Shikuni. Okay, anyway. So he was cheating Yudhishthir from his kingdom, and even from his wife. And that was another big thing that, you know, some other, I don't know exactly how it happened, it's a little bit of a controversial topic, but some other, he put his wife up in the dice game. And it's kind of a bad thing to do, of course, but, you know, he thought, you know, I'll just put my wife and then I can win everything back. So, of course, he lost his wife. And then Duryodhan asked his servant to drag the wife of the Pandavas, because she was actually married to all five of them. This is another story in itself. But I can't get into it. But it's very unusual. But this lady, she was called Draupadi, she was very, very qualified. So she was actually able to marry five husbands. But it has a special story, but I don't have time now to tell it. So she was dragged into the dice game, and they wanted to strip her of her clothes even. And of course, at that time, Krishna intervened, and he supplied unlimited amounts of sari. So they kept pulling her sari, and then because of Krishna, the sari kept coming. So she was, her chastity was protected. But still, she was very, very much insulted, and, you know, especially Arjuna's older brother Bhima, he was very, very angry. And so this was another thing, that there was already so much bad blood. But then later also Duryodhan tried to poison them. He tried to, you know, he invited them to a house and he made a special house full of, like, you know, very lightable wood. So they put them in the house and then they locked it and they put it on fire. And luckily the Pandavas, Arjuna and his brothers, they were warned, and they some other day, you know, there was like a hidden gateway and they escaped. But, you know, there were so many attempts on their lives, and finally they asked, if you can just give us 5 villages, so we have some small area to govern, then it will be okay. And Duryodhana, he answered, I will not even give you a small piece of land where you can put in a needle. I will not give you nothing. So this was unacceptable, and then later also Krishna tried to negotiate that Duryodhan, you know, come on, these are your nephews, but he was, you know, he was really unreasonable. So, you know, ultimately there was this fight. So Arjuna, being kind-hearted devotee, he didn't want to fight. He said, Krishna, you know, this is my family, my teachers are there, because many of his martial art teachers, they were on the other side because they were upholding the kingdom, because the Pandavas were basically, yeah, they were not kings, they were just princes, and Duryodhan was the king. So the teachers, they were actually siding on the wrong side because they felt they should protect the kingdom. So this is another whole story in itself. But this was one of the reasons also why Arjuna didn't want to fight. Is it's my own teachers, it's my nephews. You know, I can't do it. And then Krishna started to argue it with him, that no, you should do it, you know, don't be a coward, you know, you will be forced to fight because you're a warrior, so people will say you're a coward. And then Arjuna, he started to doubt, he started to get confused. And then he surrendered to Krishna. He said, Krishna, you know, I know we were friends, but now I want you to become my guru, and I will surrender to you. You just tell me now what to do. And then Krishna began to speak, and the first thing he actually said to Arjuna, he said that you're not his body. That was the first instruction he gave him. He said, Arjuna, why are you, to say it like in ISKCON we many times, Prabhu, don't be mental. So this is basically what Krishna told Arjuna, why are you so mental? You know, because these people are not the body, they are an eternal soul. And then he started to explain about the qualities of the soul, that the soul cannot be cut, it cannot die, it cannot be dried, it cannot be destroyed. It's eternal. So you don't have to worry, and they'll just get other bodies. So like that, Krishna starts to argue. And then at the end of the second chapter, he started to explain that that you can renounce your work, but you can also work with intelligence. You can also use your intelligence. And then Arjuna, he got confused. He said, well, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to renounce work? Or you want me to perform my duty and work? Or you want me to be completely renounced? So this is a tendency that we have in spiritual life, that we go from one extreme to the other. We either, it's called bhoga chak, we want to enjoy. This is another definition of karma. Karma also means fruit of activity. So activity, and then enjoy the fruits of that activity. So you work hard. You are a good citizen, law-abiding citizen. You do your job, you work hard, but then you enjoy the fruits. So that is called karma. And then another extreme is that actually, you know, I'm doing my work, but I'm not really happy because I know that we're going to die, or we're going to get sick, we're going to get old. So I'm going to renounce everything. I'm going to go to the forest and I'm going to be completely detached. So Arjuna was confused that, what do you want me to do, Krishna? He said, he said, so you want me to work? He said, why you want me to be engaged in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruit of work? So Arjuna was confused because Krishna said that you should use your intelligence. But what Krishna meant was that you have to do your duty, but at the same time you have to be detached from the fruits. So you do your job, but you don't be attached to the result. The result is up to God. And in fact, you offer the result to Krishna. That's the idea. And that is actually the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So that was the question at the beginning of this chapter called Karma Yoga. So yoga means to connect, and karma means, you know, work, action, or in this context, fruitive action or fruitive activity. So, and then, you know, I will not go through the whole chapter because it would take too long. So then today, so that was my introduction. So you have a little idea of the discussion that is going on. I'll recap a little bit because then Krishna was explaining about Vedic sacrifices. He said, you should, here he says in text number, let me get this straight, text number 17, text 16, he says, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice established by the Vedas leads a life full of sin, living only for the satisfaction of the senses. Such a person lives in vain. So it's quite strong words. But again, this is also one of the reasons why I sit on this high seat. This is spoken by Krishna. And Krishna, like I said in the beginning, is accepted by all the great teachers as being non-different from God. In fact, he is God. He's the supreme personality of God, as Prabhupada wrote, is like the most perfect definition. And so what I'm speaking, if I do my job properly and I just repeat what Krishna says, then everything I say is perfect because I'm repeating what the perfect person is saying. That's why I'm sitting on this big chair. It's that we honor the speaker because what he speaks is perfect. Of course, the speaker also has some activities. His activities also should be proper. That's why we follow certain rules and regulations. If we want to have sex, then we need to get married. We don't use drugs. We don't use alcohol. We don't eat meat. Things like that. There's certain behavior also that you need to adopt. But the principle is that you repeat what Krishna is saying. And so Krishna is using strong words, but like I said, he's the authority on the subject matter. Yeah, so he's saying you should do the regulated activities. And in one sense you could say that, because Veda ultimately means knowledge. I mean, generally when we speak about Veda, we speak about the text from, well, we could say from India, but they're actually eternally manifested the text of knowledge. But Veda ultimately means knowledge. So you could say that the Bible, if it's in line with the Vedas, that it's also Veda. And the Bible also says you have to follow certain rules and regulations. So that Krishna says you have to follow, and everybody ultimately knows that. Even if somebody's atheistic, he knows you have to have some moral principles. Otherwise, it's not good. But the thing with Bhagavad Gita, it goes one step further. That is what we discussed today, actually. And it's quite a mind-blowing concept, actually, if you think about it. But if you understand it properly, then you can see that all the great sages, they lived like that. Like Muhammad or this other sage from Christianity. I forgot his name, but he was talking to the animals. And it was a very nice... Franciscus, I think his name was, yeah. So you can see that these saints, they were actually living according to what Krishna is speaking today. So I will repeat it one more time. I hope I haven't lost you yet, because it might be a little bit complicated, but we can have some questions. So Krishna is explaining about the spiritual person. He speaks about the self-realized man. Well, I'm now at text 18. I'm kind of leading up to the text of today. And then today we're saying, therefore, So he Krishna described the self-realized man. He has no, that is text 18, he has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties. Nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. So if you think, for instance, of Franciscus, I think that's his name, then he was also kind of roaming in the forest. He wasn't really depending on anybody. And he didn't have a specific duty. At the same time, it was not that he was not doing nothing. He was working also. I think he was writing and like that. So we have to see it in that light. Head Prabhupada says it also in the purport of text number 8. He says, a self-realized man is no longer obliged to perform any prescribed duty, save and accept activities in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, these saintly men, they're always like preaching and writing, which is indirect preaching. Here Prabhupada explains that Krishna consciousness is not inactivity either. And that is what is being explained today. But this is the last, this is an important point, because this is, for instance, what Muhammad was very much preaching. He says, a Krishna conscious man does not take shelter of any person, man or demigod. In the days of, for instance, Muhammad, there was so many demigod worship. Like if you didn't have any money, then you couldn't worship God. Like you had the god of trade and you had the god of, you know, I don't know, money or whatever. And then, you know, people with money, they could worship the gods. And then Muhammad, he said, no, there is only one God and everybody can worship him. So you can see that also that Muhammad, he wasn't depending on any man, any, you know, powerful demigod or anybody. And Jesus, the same thing. He was very, I don't know, kind of an anarchistic person. He also wasn't at all catering to the society. He was just preaching straight Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, that anybody can do this. You don't need any money or whatever. So therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. So it's not so easy to do that, to not be attached to the result. Even like people here that do voluntary work, but still, you know, you get attached to the result. It's inevitable. I mean, at the same time, you also want to do your job properly. But we should really try and practice this. That the idea is to just be Krishna conscious of Krishna. And this is a very elevated stage. The stage actually that we want to obtain, it's called Vipralamba. That means attachment in separation. So we want to think of Krishna, although we are separated from him. That is actually the mood of the most exalted devotees, the gopis. The gopis are the coward girls, and they are so attached to Krishna that when he leaves and he starts to herd the cows, they are constantly talking about him and thinking about him and remembering him. And this is actually the mood that we should develop. That we should develop the mood that, where is Krishna? You know, I miss Krishna, and talk about Krishna. And this is called the Vipralamba, the attachment in a separation. But another important thing that Prabhupada says here is the supreme is the personality of Godhead for the devotees and liberation for the impersonalist. So for the devotee, the supreme is Krishna. And for the impersonalist, that is like the yogi, it is liberation. And the impersonalist, they generally, they don't believe that Krishna is a supreme person, but he is an ordinary person. And therefore we refer to them as impersonalist, because they want to make actually Krishna, in one sense an imperson, because they want to make him a normal person, but he's the supreme person. And they want to, they basically want to merge with the supreme effulgence that emanates from Krishna's body, and that is called liberation. The Buddhists also have a similar philosophy. A person, therefore, acting for Krishna or in Krishna consciousness under proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work, is certainly making progress toward the supreme goal of life. Yeah, so we need to have proper guidance. And again, Prabhupada repeats, we need to be without attachment to the result. So, you know, one of the practical advice that Prabhupada was giving is that if you, for instance, live outside, then you should, Prabhupada said, you should give 50% to the temple. Now, it's not always possible, but that is basically the standard that Prabhupada said. And if you want to act on the highest level, then that is recommended. I mean, how you cannot think of Krishna if you give 50% of your income to Krishna? It's going to be very difficult not to think of Krishna. So I explained, because sometimes it's a little bit difficult for people to understand that, you know, here is Krishna, Supreme Person, the Personality of God, and he's telling Arjuna to fight. So I think I more or less explained why it was proper for Krishna to order him to fight. Because Arjuna's brother was the most exalted person. He never lied, and he was very righteous, he was very qualified, and he was supposed to be on the throne. So Arjuna was just basically being attached to his family. It was like a sentiment. Of course, it's a most extreme situation that we're discussing, because he's actually being ordered to kill his own family. So you can't get more extreme than that. But that is why this whole history took place, because Krishna wanted to show that even in an extreme example like that, that you should still do your duty and don't be attached. Of course, we have to be very conscious of the fact that Arjuna was directly ordered by Krishna to fight. So Prabhupada says, unless you're directly ordered by Krishna, then you should not fight. So this is, in one sense, it's very exceptional. And generally, devotees, they don't fight. But to protect Krishna, then we can do something. But to protect oneself, a devotee will never do anything. And that was Arjuna. He was also not thinking. He was actually thinking about himself. He was saying, "I'm not going to fight. I'm just going to be renounced." But he was forgetting about the kingdom, about his duty, about his brothers. So that is another thing that we have to consider when we perform our duty. That we should not only consider ourselves, but we should also consider other people. Okay. Oh yeah, the last point, that is the final paragraph. I just need to mention that Prabhupada says, Vedic rituals, like prescribed sacrifices, are performed for purification of impious activities that were performed in the field of sense gratification. So generally these Vedic rituals, like for instance also in the church, when you work, you want to do something nice with your money, and then generally you perform impious activities. So to counteract that, you need to do pious activities. So like that, you sin and then you do something good, and it goes on like that. But Prabhupada, so that is good, it's a good thing. But Prabhupada says, but action in Krishna consciousness is transcendental to the reactions of good or evil work. That doesn't mean that Krishna consciousness work is evil. It's actually most good. In fact, it's called pure goodness. But sometimes it might appear as bad. Like in this case, Arjuna was asked to fight against his own family. So if you don't know the history and all the intricacies, it might look like a bad thing to do. He's killing his own family. But if you look at it more closely, ultimately, of course, Arjuna won. And, the kingdom was saved. And it was ruled by King Yudhisthira, and the whole world became actually very, very peaceful. So we have to look at the result. And, Krishna, because ultimately, good and bad, it's coming from Krishna. So Krishna always acts in the good for everyone. So a Krishna conscious person actions will always be beneficial for everyone and everything. Okay, so I'll stop there. Is there any comment or question? Otherwise, we can just have bhajan. So next week, Friday, we'll have the Radhadesh Mellows. It's 2 days, almost 3 days, starting Friday night. going on till Saturday and Sunday. 3 days of chanting Hare Krishna. So everybody is invited. And today we'll give you a small taste of what you can expect. So thank you very, very much. Hare Krishna.